Rick Ganley, this is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. When you look at the facts and figures on gun ownership in the Granite State, to some extent, New Hampshire reflects the nation. Across the country, rural states like ours tend to have fewer restrictions on firearms. Surveys show rural residents, many of whom grew up around guns, hunting, or target practice, are 60% more likely to have guns than urban and suburban folk. But while the number of people owning firearms nationally has declined, here in New Hampshire, it's the opposite. Over the past decade, 5% more Granite Staters have become gun owners. All this week, NHPR has been looking at trends like these and at the many other facets of the gun debate here in New Hampshire in a series called A Loaded Issue. It's examined everything from existing gun laws to firearms manufacturers in the state to the politics and demographics of the topic. Today in The Exchange, we dig into another aspect of this story, the history of our cultural attitudes toward firearms, where those attitudes come from, and the forces shaping them today. We begin at the beginning with New Hampshire historian Stu Wallace. I asked him to look way back for the first few hundred years of our history and describe the prevailing attitude about guns.
Well, guns actually were not only legally necessary, but they were also necessary for survival. You were required, if you were an adult male of a certain age, to actually have a gun and be ready to serve in the militia. So the law actually said, have a gun. But in addition, if you were a farmer of some sort, you probably had a gun either for hunting purposes or, frankly, just to get rid of predators and nuisances. So it was a tool about as useful as a shovel or a hoe.
Predators going after your livestock, for example.
Well, yeah, especially when we turn to sheep farming, because sheep don't really protect themselves very well. And so we had actually a series of bounties. You were actually rewarded for going out and shooting wolves or coyotes or even woodchucks, anything that could be a threat to your livestock or a problem with gardens or fields.
So given what you said, Stu, about guns really being necessary to protect your property, protect your livestock, also to take part in the militia if need be, what then does the New Hampshire Constitution say about guns way back when it was first written?
It didn't say much when it was first written. They kind of avoided the subject. They probably avoided the subject on the grounds that they may have assumed that it was already covered by the U.S. Constitution, although that was not the case yet. They really didn't say much at all about guns.
So when do people first start talking, Stu, about guns and that there might be some need for some legislation surrounding ownership and use of those guns?
Well, first of all, to some degree, the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution may have brought it into debate. Although it wasn't much of a debate, it was simply an assumption that you needed to defend your liberties against a foreign foe of some sort, and the best way to do that was a militia. And all the militia laws of the day, and the militia laws of the day were extensive. Basically, they said you had to have a gun, you had to be ready to serve. There really isn't much legislation about guns, as much as you might think. There were some pieces of legislation about gun safety and use of guns, but New Hampshire really doesn't get into gun legislation until 1923, when they passed the first of laws dealing with the actual maintenance, use, care of guns. And that is a mystery because there are very few records around today which actually explain even why they considered it.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my next question, Stu. What prompted the idea that there might be some need for restrictions of guns in that era, 1923?
Well, the big concern that many people had in urban areas was violence associated with unions. There had been some shootings, there had been bomb throwings, there had been violence associated with union strikes going back to the 1890s, if not before. And Manchester, or New Hampshire in general, had just gone through a huge strike, a 9-month-old strike at Amersgaig Manufacturing Company in 1922. And so there was fear that a strike of this sort and the anger that resulted not only from the strike but the failed outcome for the laborers might lead to some violence. So that would be a possible motive for beginning to limit the use of guns. It was unnecessary. There wasn't any real violence, certainly no gun-related violence with the Manchester strike, but it may well have been on people's minds.
After the 1920s, Stu, when do we see the next big shift in change in laws or attitudes?
Well, you don't see many laws, except there are a series of small laws dealing with the gun safety, children and guns, sales of guns. But these are pretty milquetoast pieces of legislation. The big piece of legislation finally comes in 1987 when they get into a fairly hefty law dealing with defining handguns, concealed weapons. And that really was the year that they started to tackle the issue. From that year on, there were attempts almost every year to deal with gun-related issues. And gun-related issues were largely dealt with as a state issue at this time, not a federal issue.
What New Hampshire politicians over time, Stu, have especially talked about this issue of guns, helped shape the way the issue of guns is discussed in New Hampshire?
Well, clearly the one who put it into print in his book, Live Free or Die, was Governor Meldrum Thompson. Meldrum Thompson, after he had served as governor and then tried twice to get back into the corner office and failed, published a book called Live Free or Die, and he specifically references not only gun rights, but specifically mentions the 1987 law, which deals and with gun safety. And he felt at the time that's as far as they needed to go. That's where it ought to stop. But he was a prime sponsor of gun rights, feeling that we didn't need to go beyond what we did in 1987.
And how has that state motto, Stu, live free or die, played into our cultural attitudes, our laws, our feelings about guns here in New Hampshire?
Unfortunately, it's played into not only our feeling about guns, but lots of other things. I mean, the actual words live free or die came from John Stark, and he was talking about the British and foreign invasion. And it wasn't really, it was more or less forgotten until it became our state law, our state motto, right at the aftermath of World War II, when we had just defeated the evil empires of Japan and Germany. And again, it was in the context of defending our rights against a foreign foe. But in the early 70s, it took on a whole new light. It became a motto that was used to defend individual rights against encroachment by government. That was never the context that John Stark put it into, but it became the rationale for not having nanny laws dealing with everything from motorcycle helmets to seatbelts to smoking cigarettes to what have you. And it became a rallying cry for those wishing to protect individual rights as opposed to collective or group rights.
Talking about our state motto, Stu, live free or die, let's talk about the second half of that, or die. That implies something pretty strong about what extent people might be willing to go to preserve what they see as fundamental rights.
Yes, it does, and it's probably much stronger than the originator of the phrase meant. He was talking about dying to defend your home against foreign invader. The idea that you should live free or die in order to protect your right to not have a motorcycle helmet on or to smoke in public or to wear seatbelts or what have you is a little bit drastic, and it adds sort of a dire sense of necessity to it and an almost mortal sense to it all. I don't think that was meant by the originators of the phrase.
Do you think some people have co-opted that phrase, Stu, for gun rights?
Well, they have. And in fact, people do what they've often done in protest movements. They've gone back to the American Revolution, you know, and no taxation without representation or gun rights or whatever. But if you go back in time, you have to take what you're using in time within the context of its time. I really don't think John Stark would have been thinking about cigarettes, seatbelts, helmets, or anything else. He was thinking more in terms of a foreign invasion.
What about a newer cultural movement, if I could call it that, the Free Staters, who started trickling into New Hampshire about 10 years ago and who have very broad attitudes about gun rights?
Well, what you have with the newest people coming in is you have people, number one, escaping from taxes, escaping from some urban centers and things they didn't like. And what you often tend to have also are people far more concerned with individual rights and protecting our individual rights than protecting our group rights. And the only problem with that is that while they may be coming to what they think is a nice rural utopia here in New Hampshire, the fact is we have to worry about our community rights as much as we need to think in terms of our individual rights. You know, I often say to my students, we have the right to pursue happiness, which is a wonderful phrase that Jefferson used in the Declaration of Independence. But I also say you have the right to pursue happiness as long as you don't trample on somebody else's right to pursue happiness. And I think sometimes that part is forgotten.
You know, you often find fewer gun restrictions in rural states around the country, not just New Hampshire. But then you add in this particular libertarian streak that we have, that adherence to that live free or die motto. So just overall, Stu, you add that all together, what does that end you up with?
Well, it ends you up, first of all, with a changing attitude in general. We begin to fear more for ourselves and our homes. The rural folks who owned the guns never locked their doors either. They had no fear that somebody was going to break in. But in congested city areas now, all of a sudden, there is this fear, and break-ins do occur. And so I think that as more and more people move in from city areas, many of whom are coming from areas where crime rates are higher, there is a growing fear of violence. Now, whether you meet the violence by arming yourself or whether you meet the violence by disarming everybody else, that's another issue.
Well, Stu, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you.
That's Stu Wallace, a professor and New Hampshire historian. Today in The Exchange, Granite State attitudes toward guns, where they come from, the history, and what's shaping them today. Let's hear from you. How would you describe New Hampshire's gun culture? What's the history behind it? How do you feel about that culture? Do you see it changing over time or not? You can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Coming up, more on the history of our cultural attitudes on guns. We'll talk with Andy Smith, Dean Spiliotis, and Edith Tucker. Also, I want to remind you that at 10 o'clock, we'll be going live to the State House for coverage of Governor Maggie Hassan's first budget address. So all that will be coming up at 10 o'clock. In just a moment, though, you can join us with your questions and comments on New Hampshire's gun attitudes at 1-800-892-6477. Again, the email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page or call 1-800-892-6477. And we'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more New Hampshire's gun debate coming up on The Exchange. At 10 o'clock this morning, we'll have special coverage. Governor Hassan delivers her budget address, and we'll bring you live coverage beginning at 10 o'clock this morning here on NHPR. New Hampshire weather today, clouds giving way to some partial clearing, highs ranging from 30 degrees in northern New Hampshire, 40 in southern parts of the state, and partly cloudy tonight, lows 15 degrees in the North Country, ranging to 20 to 25 in southern New Hampshire. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling. For any plumbing, heating, cooling, or drain problem, offering annual tune-ups and efficient heating systems, online at justcallheritage.com. And Dartmouth Community Medical School, presenting discovery and innovation in health. It takes a team. Six lectures, March 12th through April 23rd. Details online at Dartmouth Community Medical School. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the history of our cultural attitude toward firearms, where those attitudes come from, the forces shaping them today. Let's hear from you this hour. What are some of the historical events that may have shaped our feelings about guns in the Granite State? What are some of the new factors changing in New Hampshire even today that may be reshaping the discussion over guns? Let's get your thoughts in at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests to join us on this. Edith Tucker is here, longtime reporter for the Coos County Democrat. Edith, thank you for making the trip and good to see you.
Nice to be here.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Dean, thank you for being generous with your time today.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center, associate professor of political science at UNH. And Andy, good to have you too. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, and Andy, if you could take off your pollster hat for just a minute and put on your political science hat. You heard Stu Wallace talk about New Hampshire's longtime feelings and attitudes about guns. How much are we still that way today, Andy? Pretty comfortable with the idea of gun ownership and few restrictions.
I'd say the one thing to point out about New Hampshire is that we see that in our polling, about 45% of households say they own a gun here. So it's a somewhat higher than the national numbers, but it's not too far out of line. But we're certainly in the area of the states that are more rural. As far as the attitudes to it, what we're seeing is that it's hard to say because there isn't really specific polling data going back for a long time. But what I see is that things haven't changed tremendously over time, but we do see some greater politicization of this issue. And we see interest and gun restrictions rise and fall in relation to recent events, for example, the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut.
Yeah, and we'll definitely talk this hour about how our own attitudes were shaped, but also how those internal attitudes are shaped by outside forces. What do you think, Dean Spiliotis, if someone from another state asked you, you know, what's the cultural attitude toward guns in New Hampshire? What would you say?
Yeah, I think there's a general agreement in the state culturally in favor of Second Amendment rights. I notice every election cycle when I talk to both Democratic and Republican candidates, they both typically voice a strong defense of Second Amendment rights. They talk about the hunting culture. They talk about the need for self-defense. You know, that said, we can talk about how it has broken down along ideological lines when we talk about some of these federal laws that are being proposed. But I think there is a general agreement that this is part of the fabric of our culture, the sort of libertarian streak we have in the culture. And it's why I don't think it's quite the controversial issue here that it might be elsewhere. I saw an interesting fact yesterday that said that New Hampshire is, in terms of restrictions on gun rights, New Hampshire is something like 27th in the nation. So we're kind of somewhere in the middle, but leaning a little bit more towards a permissive environment.
Well, that surprises me, though.
Yeah, there are other states, obviously, where there are even fewer controls. But it is interesting to me in comparison to some other less rural states where there are clear differences. There seems to be kind of a baseline agreement on the right to bear arms here in the state.
Yeah, Edith, love to hear from you, too. You've been covering the North Country for a long time.
Well, I think that's very true in the North Country generally, that people believe that hunting is just a normal thing to do. That's what you do on Thanksgiving morning, and maybe in Massachusetts you go to schoolboy football, but here you go hunting. And the typical thing that people say to each other in the fall is, you know, got your deer yet? And it's very much a part of life, the moose hunt, those kinds of rituals that draw a community together. I think it's very much part of the culture of the outdoors. I think people think that more people hunting would probably reduce the obesity problems, and getting kids outdoors, they're starting youth hunts, 4-H shooting clubs.
So the family traditions continue, the generational traditions continue.
Yes, and it includes sentimentality about where you got your gun. Maybe you carry your grandfather's gun. Maybe someone gives you your first gun and you remember about deer hunting and it becomes a family story. Maybe you don't use that gun anymore, but it's part of your collection of guns because that's how you got your first deer. It's very much woven into family life and the tales of people becoming adults.
You know, someone in the series, A Loaded Issue, that the NHPR news team has been doing this week, Edith, said for many New Hampshire residents, especially maybe 20, 30 years ago, having a gun was not a political statement. It was a tool or it was a form of recreation.
That's absolutely very much so. And there's still people who don't like the fact that youth can't take a gun onto school grounds. And when they park their car, it's forbidden. It's a federal law. You cannot have a gun on school property. And they recall as boys that they would go out hunting after school on the way home. And you can't do that anymore if you can't have your guns in your pickup. So it does, you know, people feel the restrictions and the changes. They understand them, but they're not necessarily happy about them.
And they don't like the way guns have become politicized, as you said, Dean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we can talk about how it has become more of a political statement about individual liberty and has a much more kind of ideological flavor now that it once had. You know, simply having a gun with you is no longer necessarily so that you can go hunting. It's so that you can make a statement about your right to have that gun with you at all times, at least as long as it's in view.
Now, Andy, you talked earlier about your polling. You looked at this in 2002 and then in 2013, so just over a decade there. You found, I think you mentioned earlier, that about 45% of Granite State households do have guns. So almost half and half there. But there were some real interesting demographics, Andy. For example, regionally, and questions of gun control, where do people in New Hampshire's different regions fall down on the questions that you guys asked about how they felt about gun control?
Well, believe it or not, there were not that many, as much of a regional difference as you might think. Obviously, that there was greater gun ownership as you got into more rural areas of the state and less gun ownership in the more suburban areas of the state. But in terms of favoring various restrictions, there wasn't as much difference as you would expect, I think, on the rural or urban nature as there was on the political nature. So some of the areas of the state that we know are more Democratic, for example, the Connecticut River Valley, there tends to be greater support for a whole range of gun control or gun limits on gun ownership and usage and purchasing, excuse me. And that's a rural area, whereas in the North Country you see less support for those sorts of things. But actually some of the greatest opposition to some of the restrictions that have been talked about both in Washington and in New Hampshire as well have been in the kind of some of the suburban areas, but those are Republican areas. So I think that the regional differences, again, are lining up more on based on politics, more driven by politics than they are by kind of the cultural or historical things that have come up in those regions, that have developed in those regions.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because, again, nationally you hear that urban folks generally support more gun control. Rural folks generally have a more open attitude. But in New Hampshire, as you said, Andy, Manchester was pretty much often the most against gun control.
Yeah, and Manchester is a little bit of an unusual thing because when we do our analyses here, it's Manchester and the towns around Manchester. So the city itself of Manchester may be more in favor of some restrictions, but you've got some big Republican towns right nearby, Bedford and Hooksett, for example, and Goffstown as well, who I think have their positions on gun control really driven by politics and not so much local politics, I think, as other folks have talked about this morning, but as much as the national politics. And I think what we're seeing with the pushes on gun control and the debates are driven by national political advantage that is seen rather than things here in New Hampshire.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. We're looking back at New Hampshire's historical cultural attitudes toward firearms, where those attitudes come from, how they're being shaped by different forces today. We'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. How would you describe the history behind New Hampshire's gun culture, some of the family attitudes and generational traditions that Edith Tucker talked about? How do you personally feel about that culture? How do you see it changing over time, if at all? Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And before we go to our listeners, all of you, Dean Spiliotis, I did want to return to some of that real interesting conversation we had earlier with historian Stu Wallace. I was surprised to learn, Dean, that New Hampshire's original constitution didn't say anything about guns.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I found that surprising as well. I just read that the other day. I thought that, you know, we heard some reasons for why that's the case. I thought it was interesting, just as an aside, that he talked about 1987 as this kind of moment where you have a real discussion about defining the nature of handguns and concealed weapons and gun control. If you remember what's going on in the 80s and early 90s, we have the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan in 1981. We have a lot of Democrats in Congress pushing for the Brady Bill, James Brady, his press secretary, who was injured. It's not until 93 and 94, when you have Bill Clinton and a Democratic Congress, that we get the Brady Bill, which is the federal background checks and the assault weapons ban. So you have this sort of 10-year period in there in which there's a heightened discussion of gun control and legislation, largely blocked by Republican presidents, Reagan and Bush the elder. And then we get this moment in the early 90s with Bill Clinton where we get these two big pieces of legislation. So I thought it was interesting that in 1982, there's this decision to write it into the Constitution. In 87, there's this other big moment. Maybe that was influenced by what was going on at the federal level. I think it's an interesting coincidence.
Edith, you know, you grew up in rural Massachusetts. Today, you've reported for a long time from a rural part of New Hampshire. How do rural folks, given the deep traditions that you talked about earlier, feel about being buffeted by these national political forces that Dean talks about?
Well, it's interesting that there's really not that much conversation going on just normally about this topic. I was surprised. But yesterday I did, knowing I was coming, have a chance to talk with a real cross-section of people. And the one thing that most people agreed on is that more thorough background checks, no matter where you bought a gun, whether it was at a gun show or from a dealer or whatever, would be good. But there is a concern that that information that you would give at a background check might be, in an emergency, so-called, be brought out by the police department or someone else against you. So there is a tremendous interest in preventing the kind of tragedies at Newtown. But on the other hand, privacy and the ability to keep information about yourself private is a very strong tradition.
Yeah, the libertarian streak not only applies to, you know, don't infringe upon my rights, but also don't infringe upon my privacy. So that is folded in.
Right. And it's interesting because there isn't a lot of personal privacy when you live in a rural area. People notice all kinds of things about you that they wouldn't notice in a city. But having it in writing and having it go to an authority of some kind, a government agency that would have that information about you readily on a computer, is really not something that appeals to people.
Yeah, so another culture attitude being folded into this. Let's go to our listeners, hear what they think. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Waiting in Webster is Michael. Hey, Michael, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I really enjoy your shows, even though I am extremely conservative. I grew up in Massachusetts. I'm actually in the city of Lawrence, and I now live in a rural area. I left Mass because of its ideology towards a lot of things. And what you hit upon a lot of points. To me, a firearm is a tool, either used for good or bad. And now it's becoming a political issue. And what's scaring me is a lot of people are starting to see everything back from the, like you said, the 94 gun control laws and all the attitudes toward city people versus rural people.
So, Michael, you moved from Massachusetts partly because you wanted a more less restrictive environment for guns.
Yes, yes. Not just guns. My personal freedoms, per se, because I grew up in a city and a state that kept imposing its will upon me, which I didn't agree with. I mean, I believe in personal responsibility. I believe in helping your neighbors. I don't know if I'm just too old-fashioned today, and just respecting people.
Well, Michael, thanks a lot for calling in. And Andy Smith, I think this is for you. You know, there's an attitude that people moving in from Massachusetts in particular, like our caller Michael, must be more on the liberal end of the spectrum, since Massachusetts is a relatively liberal state. But Michael shows us not necessarily.
Actually, I think that points out one of the interesting things about the migration and change in New Hampshire over the last several decades is that New Hampshire is the only state in the entire Northeast that's really seen significant population growth from in-migration, and it's come from primarily other people in the Northeast. We blame a lot of folks here. The old-timers tend to blame Massachusetts residents moving to New Hampshire as leading to some of the attitudinal changes as well as the political changes that we've seen in the state over the years. But what I've seen in research is that the people from Massachusetts who've moved here are actually more conservative, and they've moved to areas of the state that are now the most conservative parts of the state. That's, you know, the Rockingham County towns that are along the Massachusetts border. It's the people who've moved here from other parts of the country that are far more likely to be Democratic and far more likely to hold these attitudes opposed to, gun rights and some of the more traditional things that people in New Hampshire have seen. So don't blame the Massachusetts folks. I think they're more like the caller that we just had. It's like the last of the Republicans have moved over the border into Massachusetts and are keeping the state as Republican as it is. It's people from other parts of the country, particularly New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, even Pennsylvania, that have moved up here that are really changing some of those cultural, those kind of rural, small-town cultural attitudes that the state has had.
Dean.
Yeah, the interesting contrast, and Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, that his data shows that, you know, a rural area like the Upper Valley of New Hampshire is actually stronger in favor of gun control measures. And obviously, you know, you think about what's going on up there, it's obviously Dartmouth College, it's the medical center, it's a lot of these technology startups in the area, and that type of environment, and this is probably true for Durham as well to an extent, brings in people from other urban areas, universities, other parts of the country where there is a kind of a more liberal or progressive view of gun control regulation. So it doesn't break down purely along kind of, you know, rural, urban, or Massachusetts versus other states.
What do you think, Edith? How do people in your area talk about those newcomers and shaping or going along with prevailing attitudes, prevailing culture?
Well, you know, people are really quite accepting about newcomers. I'm always surprised, but as long as you're what's considered a good neighbor, if you're willing to help out in an emergency, if when there's an ice storm or whatever, some crisis, you're there, really where you come from doesn't really make all that much difference. I see the debate, if there is one going on in the North Country, is worried about assault weapons, the ability to own assault weapons being taken away. And my understanding is there have been high sales, a rising price in assault weapons. People are going and buying them while they feel they can get them. And even people who don't particularly like guns have said that there is something exciting about shooting them. Someone talked to me about having gone to a machine gun club a number of years ago and the thrill of that amount of lead going out of the barrel. And it's that excitement that I think is hard to capture in a debate setting, that people want to be able to recreate with guns.
So do you see an attitude shifting a little bit there, Edith? Perhaps 20 years ago, people would just buy or get through relatives hunting rifles, and today they are more interested in high capacity?
I think that's true. I think perhaps that's part of the politicization of the issue, that the idea that someone might take away the right to do something enhances its value to you. You know, get it before it, your ability to own it goes away. And there's a big feeling that it isn't the guns that cause the problem, it's the criminal that causes the problem. And where is the accountability? How will really gun control possibly be able to work to save lives?
All right. We will talk a lot more after a break and take more of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and the Bernstein Sure Affordable Care Act team, providing clients with counsel in the areas of health care law and the Affordable Care Act in Manchester and at BernsteinSure.com. And the Museum of the White Mountains at Plymouth State University, opening February 23rd with its inaugural exhibition. Information at go.plymouth.edu/MWM. 940, this is NHPR.
When discussing firearms, sides are quickly drawn up.
I think I'm more inclined to support the universal background check for all firearm sales.
And me personally, I don't own a gun, but I think anybody else should be able to own one.
The arguments are familiar, but NHPR is examining the nuances. Join us this week for Loaded Issue, a special look at NHPR's relationship to guns over the years and the issues it's created within our state. This week on NHPR and NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we'll look at Governor Hassan's first budget address. We'll bring you live coverage from the State House. And then tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll get more into the details about what the budget says. You can email us before the program if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, and join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for that follow-up to Maggie Hassan's first budget address. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the history and culture of our attitudes towards guns in the Granite State, part of NHPR series this week, A Loaded Issue. Join our conversation with your thoughts, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. How would you describe the historical events that may have shaped our attitudes in the past about guns in the Granite State, how you see those factors today, and what are some of the new elements changing in New Hampshire that may be reshaping the conversation about guns? Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And Andy Smith, Edith Tucker, Dean Spiliotis, before the break, because of what our caller Michael said about coming here from Massachusetts, liking the less restrictive environment for guns, he said he moved here because of that. We talked a lot about newcomers from Massachusetts, from elsewhere, New York, New Jersey. Andy Smith, I want to ask you about a different group of people who started coming to the state just about 10 years ago. That's the Free Staters. Mm-hmm. How have they shaped New Hampshire's, again, cultural attitudes about guns?
Well, I don't think they've really had that big of an impact in terms of the overall public. Their hope was about 20,000 people would move into the state, and out of a state of a population of 1.3 million, that's not very much, and I don't think they're halfway to that goal. That said, I think they've impacted the debate about guns largely because in the 2010 elections, a number of these folks, or people who held similar positions, were recruited to run for office as Republicans and won seats, particularly in the House of Representatives. And then with that, there were a number of rather high-profile things that raised several issues that raised the profile of guns in New Hampshire. For example, one of the first things that was done, and it was a rules issue, but it allowed people to carry guns onto the floor of the House and the Senate in the Capitol building. Did that make it much of a difference? No, probably, but it certainly raises the visibility. And for people who are opposed to guns, they would say, what kind of people would want to bring guns into the legislature, for crying out loud? So I think the Free State movement hasn't had a broad impact, but I think symbolically and through legislation and raising the visibility of the gun issue in Concord, it's raised the visibility of it across the state.
So a small group of people, perhaps, Andy, but with a big voice.
Absolutely. I think that the voice is much louder than their political impact was when they got elected. The political impact isn't in the sense that there are a lot of these folks out there who can elect folks who are a big voting bloc. I think it's just to point out, it's really important that we remember that most people have no idea who their state rep or their state senator is. They vote for somebody because of the R or the D after the name, and it's who gets recruited to run that is critical. And, you know, give credit to libertarian groups and free state groups of getting people to run for the offices, because neither Republican or Democratic Party can recruit enough people to run for the legislature. So they got people to run, and they believed in these particular issues, and they pushed them. They just proved not to be that popular.
All right, let's take another call if we could. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. And John's calling from Colebrook. Hi, John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good to talk with you. And Edith Tucker has it right. You know, guns are viewed up here much more as a heritage thing, a traditional thing, and looked upon as tools. And Edith said that, and that has not been said enough in this whole subject. When every time some wingnut uses a gun to kill people, we have this discussion. But really, I think people tend to forget that gun ownership has been going on ever since people first became able to get them. But it's not a political thing at all. I don't think that way about the guns that I own. They're just in a place right where I can reach for them when I need them, for whatever the purpose. So, this whole political thing bothers me, and it is strictly for me a libertarian issue. I know I'm a libertarian bordering on being an anarchist. So, but I don't look at my guns as things of political or any kind of statement. Nor am I really worried about the government taking them. I don't think that's going to happen.
John, can I ask you a quick question?
I have to say very quickly, the people I know do think that, assault rifles, it's a terrible definition, by the way, but clips of more than, five rounds, that may be a starting point. I don't know. It's a very touchy issue.
Yeah, and John, real glad you called. I'm guessing this is John Harrigan, longtime publisher in the North Country, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to talk to you. I wanted to ask you a question. You said, you know, every time some wingnut, to use your language, goes crazy and does something with a gun, you have, unfortunately, some terrible experience with that. The horrible Colebrook shooting rampage in the late 90s, four people were killed, two straight troopers, a judge, a newspaper editor, friends of yours, dear friends of yours. Did that incident, which was just wrenching for the North Country, and especially Colebrook, did that change anybody's feelings about guns?
Not that I know of. And again, I don't pretend to speak for everybody up here.
Sure.
I'm just a writer and an editor. But no, I don't think so. I think the attitude was that this was a piece of space debris, like a piece of Skylab that came down and hit us. And it happens everywhere, every day to some town somewhere, and it happened to be our turn. I don't know of anything that could have changed the situation or the outcome. It just happened, and we weren't prepared for it. How would you be?
Well, John, really good to hear from you. Glad you called in today. Thanks a lot.
Hey, I'm glad you guys are discussing the subject. It's really so far-reaching that you need a few more shows to do this.
Yeah, right. All right, thanks a lot, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, Dean Spiliotis, I asked him whether that Colebrook shooting rampage changed attitudes in the North Country, in Colebrook. He said no. What about nationally, though, when we have incidents like Aurora, Colorado, Newtown, Connecticut? How does that shape gun attitudes in states like New Hampshire, where in general you have a more favorable attitude towards guns?
Typically, I mean, Andy may be able to speak specifically to New Hampshire, but in general, kind of on the national trend, these types of, tragedies kind of have sort of you typically see kind of a short-term blip in favor of some sort of stricter regulation. And then once as this plays out over time, you start to see some kind of differences over, how you go about that, whether it's an assault weapons ban or these large magazine clips or background checks or mental health. From a legislative perspective, you sense the kind of urgency among Democrats that if they're going to do something about it, for all the talk about how this Newtown was different and we're finally going to have some change, the devil's in the details. And when they start to really get down to trying to enforce gun control, new gun control legislation, it becomes very difficult. Even if the attitudes shift a little bit, it always seems to kind of come back to this sort of equilibrium where we've been for a while.
All right. Edith, do you want to jump in real quick there, and then let's go to another call?
Well, I think John Harrigan is absolutely right that, as a whole, those terrible shootings didn't change people's attitudes. It did, however, change the training of law enforcement. And one of the things that came out in the report that was done after those shootings was that many officers have not been in the Army where they'd had live fire training. So one of the things that did change was how you train fish and game officers and other law enforcement, how they think about their other weapons they have at their hands other than guns, such as the cruiser itself.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a tremendous examination, self-examination in law enforcement that did change how they looked at how they should be prepared to deal with these kind of whoever called it, the wingnut.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So broadly, culturally, not a lot of change. But within that particular law enforcement culture,
and that's
yes.
A very large culture in the North Country and getting larger as we bring in federal and state prisons. So we have more law enforcement in a general sense.
Let's take another call. And this is Steve waiting in Keene. Steve, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. When I was growing up in Hollis, I was on the high school cross-country team, and one time I went out for a practice run in the town forest, and I got lost and found myself in somebody's hayfield, where I was met by the landowner and his dog and his rifle.
Oh, boy.
And I wanted to find my way back home, so I asked him to show me the road. He wouldn't do it. He ordered me back into the woods where I came from at the barrel of his gun. Either I did that or he would have a legal right to kill me under New Hampshire's stand your ground laws, and there would be no legal repercussions. And so ever since that day, and I'm 50 now. I felt that, you know, stand your ground laws and permissive gun laws are a really dangerous combination.
Yeah, so personal experience, Steve, they're really shaping your feelings.
Yep.
All right. What a story. Andy Smith, what do you think?
Don't know what to make about that specifically, but I think that the guy who did that probably was not in his rights to threaten somebody with a gun just because they happen to be on the property by accident. There's really no threat there, I imagine, from a cross-country runner decked out in tennis shoes and a T-shirt. But that said, I think one of the things that we have to point out that we haven't really talked about yet with this issue is that for most people, the issue of gun control or gun usage isn't that important to them. It's not high on their radar screens of things to pay attention to, socially or politically. For gun owners, it's just, as some of the earlier callers have pointed out, it's just another tool. It's just something that you've got around. It's rather matter of fact. You know, there may be some attitudes that are tied to hunting and family traditions with it. And for people who live in urban areas or suburban areas who don't have guns, it's really not something that they see every day, or even in a, particularly in a state like New Hampshire with very low crime rates, it's not something that they think about much. But when you see these national events, as Dean talked about, that's when you see interest in gun control or gun issues pop up. And that's where you see both proponents of stricter gun control really try to take advantage of that political moment. And opponents, what they tend to do is last through it and maybe state their case like the NRA. And then once it gets into the legislative process, it almost always dies because there just isn't the kind of political support to increase these to increase gun control laws as there is political opposition. Because if you talk about where there's greater strength in the opponents who are worried, as one of our other callers said, about having their guns taken away or being on a federal database that people know about, whereas proponents of it, it doesn't really bother them that much. It doesn't impact their daily life that much.
Well, Steve, thank you for the story. And Josh Rogers did a great piece this morning on Stand Your Ground and looking at all sides of this discussion. You know, it's interesting, though, Dean Spiliotis says, we've been talking about cultural attitudes here in New Hampshire, how they shape our conversation about guns. We've looked at the history. We've looked at how people feel about Second Amendment rights. Edith Tucker talked about privacy rights. There's a strong adherence to privacy rights in the state. And our caller brings up another cultural attitude that adds in, property rights.
Absolutely. And it's all, it feeds into the larger notions of, you know, you have your property, your domain is your castle, as they say. Absolutely. And I think, you know, New Hampshire is another place where you sort of think about individual liberties and property rights, in part because we're more spread out than you get in a lot of states with big urban populations. You know, there's one interesting thing that popped into my mind as we're talking about kind of the national political context and how that relates or does not relate with New Hampshire attitudes. I remember back in either 2010 during the sort of Tea Party moment, or when President Obama was pushing for Obamacare, and there was a rally up here, I believe it was Obama, and a fellow showed up with a sidearm strapped to his thigh in full view, and that's you don't need a permit to do that in New Hampshire. It's not a concealed weapon. It got the most incredible national media attention I think I have ever seen. Every cable channel interviewed this guy. It was on every major newscast that this person showed up with a visible sidearm, right? And it just shows you how there's sort of sometimes a clash between the national political culture and a more kind of day-to-day view of guns here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, interesting. 50 states, 50 different attitudes, yep. For sure. And let's go lastly to Roland in Holderness. Hi, Roland, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to make a quick point. I born and raised in Switzerland. Switzerland is fairly liberal, but has fairly liberal gun laws as well. In the sense of at 14 years old, you start shooting at a range. Every town has its own range. With 19, you go into the military. Literally, every household in Switzerland has an AR-15 type of rifle. And we don't have the violence that we see over here. We don't have, you know, the extreme incidents that we see here with guns. And I just feel like it's a society issue with responsibility that's basically been taken away from individuals. In the sense of, you know, if you commit the crime, you got to do the time.
So
I live in New Hampshire. I'm proud to live in New Hampshire. It's part of the reason why I live in New Hampshire, because the living free type of living free and die type of atmosphere that's here. So I just wanted to make that point. And if you ever want to watch on YouTube, Swiss and their guns kind of explains it why. You know, they own the guns, but we don't have that violence.
Well, and why do you think that's the case, Roland? That's really interesting.
I just think it's from an early age, the education part of it has something to do with it. Like I said, at 14, we started shooting as part of our phys ed program. So guns become part of almost like a lifestyle, but it's not used to commit crimes. It's used to as a weekend event in the sense of everybody goes to the shooting range. When you go into the military, I personally think this country could use a draft, not necessarily to send people overseas, but just to learn, you know, respect and respect your, you know, elders and contribute to the overall country. So,
all right. Well, Roland, I have to close you out there, but we went from New Hampshire cultural attitudes about guns to Switzerland. So thanks for making that transition for us.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you. And all of you, we've run out of time. I want to thank you all very much for coming in. It's been a great conversation. Edith Tucker, thank you for driving down to Concord for us today.
I really enjoyed it.
Edith Tucker, longtime reporter for the Coos County Democrat. Andy Smith, thank you for your time.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science at UNH. And Dean Spiliotis, coming up, you and I will be looking at Governor Hassan's first budget address. So I won't say goodbye. I'll just say stand by.
Looking forward to it.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Governor Hassan's budget address. I'm Laura Kanoy.